Anywhere Boxing.
Tyler's Boxing Weekly Podcast.
To catch up or refresh on a back catalogue
of over 200 episodes,
or find the links to our YouTube channel and any of our social media platforms, click the link below, click on the show notes for knockout details on the past, present and future of Irish boxing. You're welcome on in. Episode number 201. And it's hard to believe it's almost a year ago to the day since our last episode went out. I missed you an awful lot in the last couple of weeks and months. But if I'm brutally honest, not so much before that. But far more importantly, before I get into any of that, is to pay the utmost respect and to remember a man who helped shape boxing as we know it today on this island. In fact, he left it in a far better place than what it is right now when he hung up his gloves. I'm speaking, of course, of the late, great Hugh Russell, who sadly passed away after a very brief illness. He was laid to rest earlier this week. And it goes without saying, we'll speak a little bit about Hugh's amazing career in the amateur and professional boxing rings a little bit later in this episode. And after such a lengthy break from boxing, from podcasting, from me speaking to you and interacting with you on such a regular basis, it'd be very easy and it'd be very simple for me to have an episode absolutely chock-a-block full of everything and try and catch up on what's gone on in the last year, because there's been a lot of water passed under a lot of bridges. And again, I thank you and you and you and everybody, wherever you are, and there's many of you far and wide who have been in touch at different points to see how I'm getting on, to see is everything okay, to wish me well, to see some of you being nosy, some of you genuinely ones who know more and know me better, just reaching out, just letting me know. And I cannot tell you how much I value that and appreciate it, and how important it was at times, because at times I was gone out that door, gone. One of the questions I've been asked quite a bit is, did I know when I made the last episode that I was going to disappear for a while? And thought about it a little bit, and I'm still thinking about it. Kinda. Ish. If I'm really honest, no, I didn't know. I didn't know. And to keep it brief, I guess post-lockdown, life has been struggle for all of us in different ways. And I'm not going to exaggerate it. I'm not going to make it out to be something it's not. I'm not going to put a label on it. It's no more hectic for me than it is for you. It's in different ways for all of us. We found it difficult to get back to the level that we were at. And I suppose it's like a fighter, in a way, being out of the ring, being injured or being retired, and having a grow for something or having a want for something, and a question in their mind, can I still do it? Should I still do it? Will I be able to still do it? And getting back to the level of doing the camp, getting your cardio back up, getting your sparring back up, getting the intensity of everything back up. And I think, if I'm trying to put it in every man's language, I think that's what I struggle with. And I think that's what a lot of people are struggling with, the pace of getting the life back to where it was previously. And for a long time, the podcast was all I had. And the more it grew, the more avenues we went down, the more I became invested in it. It was more time, more energy. I was writing all the time. I was creating. I was editing. I was putting shows together. I was contacting people all the time, networking, and loving every minute of it. Lockdowns happened. It kept my head on straight. It helped me focus. It gave me something to zero in on. But I realized eventually, and just in time, before it cost me everything I hold dear, it can't be all-encompassing, that it has to slot in to the bigger picture. The bigger picture being the everyday world, real world. And keeping a very long story short, just before I did Niall's episode, I was really struggling. I was finding it difficult to write. I was finding it difficult to even watch a fight, enjoying a fight. I was finding it difficult to watch any coverage. Just wasn't enjoying it. I had oversaturated. I was just at a point where I'd had enough. So I needed to take a break. And the big man reached out to me and asked me, could I do that episode for him? And of course I would do it. And of course I would do it for anybody. But the fact that it was Niall Kennedy made it a little bit more special. And I'll never ever stop being grateful and thankful to Niall for asking me. He could have chosen RTE, he could have chosen Off the Ball, he could have chosen any platform out there. He came to me.
cannot wait to catch up with Niall in the next couple of weeks to sit down with him and see where he's been since that episode. Because I can tell you, in true champion style, the grass hasn't grown under his feet. He's branched out and he's back on track to being the champion that we all love and appreciate.
And it was never a defined period of time out. A couple of weeks borrowed, a couple of months, and a couple of months borrowed another couple. And during that time, a lot of it, the only boxing content that I consumed regularly as it dropped, you gotta get a listen to Beyond Boxing Podcast. For me, it's the best boxing content in this place. Really and truly, Terry, he keeps it to the point. He speaks his truths. He knows what he's speaking about. And he knows the people, in most cases, that he's speaking about too. So Terry, mate, it's always a privilege and a pleasure to listen and to speak with you.
You'll find him on Twitter, you'll find him on Instagram, and you'll find him on Apple, iTunes, Spotify, across all those platforms. You gotta go check it out.
But as the time went by, I slowly found myself getting sucked back in again, getting myself interested, finding myself watching, listening, and eventually laughing to myself, who am I kidding? I love this game. I love the fighters. I love what makes them so special and so intriguing to all of us, that they do what we cannot do, for the most part. They push themselves to limits, to true boundaries that most of us can't even comprehend. And unlike Premier League footballers, or unlike stars or celebrities from around the world, they're not detached. They're almost, to a man, to a woman, to a fighter, they're almost all contactable. They'll interact with all of us, regardless of the level they're at. Okay, there are a few who maybe are surrounded by layers and rings, and we've spoken about AJ and his detachment from the fans, but to the most part, every one of these fighters are reachable and relatable. And quite quickly then, I found myself looking at the content, analysing it, and seeing, oh, why ask that question? Why not ask this question? Why not go on to that? Why not develop the questions? And that's when I knew. That's when I smiled and laughed and thought to myself, who are you kidding, son? But for me to make it work this time around, and for me not to hit the same barriers and hit the same ceiling as I did the last time, it's important, and it has been important, for me to make changes. And there are changes. It won't be just me. I'm going to introduce you in hopefully the next episode to our new co-host. A fellow who I think you're going to enjoy as much as I'm enjoying getting to know. I know him fairly well, but part of the adventure, part of the excitement in building this podcast, phase two, will come from there. And it'll be very easy for me to try and cover and come up to speed in everything or most things that have gone on in boxing over the last 12 months or so, because there's been an awful lot of water, as I said, have passed beneath an awful lot of bridges. I can't do that. I won't do that. But here's what we will do in this episode. Regular listeners to the podcast will know that it's no secret. I've never been behind the door in questioning the ones who control the Irish professional boxing scene,
the Boxing Union of Ireland.
I've been critical at times,
scathing, some might say.
But I've always tried to be fair and honest in my assessment
and view of where the scene is at.
Is it the fighters?
Is it the administrators?
Is it the whole lot thrown in together?
Where is boxing right now as a scene?
Let's take a helicopter view of the whole lot and see where we're at. And where would Irish boxing have been over the years without feuds, without rivalries, without divides?
Dare I even say without conflict?
Frampton McGuigan has become something of a conflict all to itself over the last few weeks and months and years.
And it's definitely caught fire again
with the publication of Carl's new book in the last couple of weeks. I'm going to have a little bit of a look into that, the background of it. Two hugely popular fighters in their own right,
intrinsically linked
until they weren't. And we'll close out the show by having a look back over one of Irish boxing's true greats. He was a champion amateur, he was a champion pro, he was a unifying figure during the darkest days of the Troubles. I'll finish up this episode by having a look back over the career and the life of the very special Hugh Russell. How would you describe Irish professional boxing over the last 12 to 18 months? Interesting question. As always, there's lots of words and lots of lines been blurred and words used that aren't quite appropriate, that aren't quite fitting to describe a lot of things in life over the last while. In boxing terms, we're looking at media, promoters, coaches, managers, fighters, people a little bit too preoccupied with what's going on in the next lane rather than staying in their own lane and perfecting what they're doing themselves. As I said, I've been critical of the BUI and their lack of drive to keep the sport alive on this island. And I know it's been difficult. In hindsight, you can look back at everything that happened since the Regency, and it was a thankless, almost impossible task. And I suppose if we're being honest, the best and safest and only real way to guarantee a repeat of what happened, those horrific scenes in Dublin, is, I suppose, a cooling off period. And that's what we got. But the danger with any cooling off period is that when it freezes so cold and goes, there's a danger of it being dead and being impossible to breathe life back into. And Irish boxers in that time, again, we can divide them into different categories. We can have the domestic professional scene and we can have the professional scene outside of this island, which I think, if we're going to be honest about it, there's different layers and different levels and different levels of ambition. And that's not to insult or put anybody down who's not boxing off this island. It takes a lot of people different times to get to different stages. But all things considered, Irish boxers have had varied time over the last 12 months. And it's been a bit of a worry. If we look over the names over the last, again, I'm just going to, off the top of my head, I'm going to name names. Ajarico, Ward, Cully, Willow Hayden, Pierce O'Leary, Paddy and Edward Donovan, the McKenna brothers, Aaron and Stevie, James McGivern, Lee Reeves, Kurt Walker, Kieran Malloy, Mick Conlon, Dennis Hogan, Luke Keeler, Katie Taylor. They've all stuttered at various points. And again, this is not an insult. This is not me putting them down. They've all, at points of their career where you think, this is within their right, this is within their capabilities. They can do this, they can do this. There's nothing here. Maybe I'm being harsh on a couple of them. Some of their careers haven't been moving the way they should be moving. We're looking at the McKennas. We're looking at Pierce O'Leary. Looking at Paddy Donovan. Again, a lot of these guys, outside of, say, Conlon, Hogan, Keeler, Taylor, a lot of those guys would have been prospects when lockdown ended. We look at, by comparison, Keyshawn Davis, Shakur Stevenson. We've got Yalilov, the big middleweight. Peter McGrail, the McCormacks. Torres Jr., Andy Cruz, Rabisi Ramirez. All of those guys, at different times in their career, were neck and neck with our fellas in the amateurs. And what is the reason? What does it come back down to? I've spoken with a lot of people in the boxing world, far and wide, to get their thoughts on it and see, is it one thing? Is it a number of things? Is it just that they're not good enough? I think to a man, everybody agrees that the talent is there, 100%. And when chatting with these people, one of the things that comes up regularly is that there are parts of the styles and the all-around fundamentals that are being sacrificed in the search for those viral-friendly, TV-friendly styles. And we'll definitely come back to that in another episode and make it a feature of an episode. But here's how I'm going to try and square the circle in terms of what might be contributing to the progress, the lack of progress of these careers and Irish boxing on the pro scene as a whole. Before I sat down to record this episode today, I have written a couple of bullet points and a couple of key trends of thought that would feed into the discussion and how I might take this topic. And as I started recording it, I was also chatting to a person who I take a lot of, who I have a lot of respect for, a fellow who is hugely regarded and very highly rated in boxing world and in terms of the boxing media and indeed in podcast space. We got to chatting over the message about a little bit of Irish history and a little bit of the periods of which were more successful for Irish fighters and why and what might have fed into that. So it was an interesting and almost eerie coming together of times and topics. And I'm working hard to try and keep long stories short from now on. So the way I'm trying to look at it, I guess, and it's not just in boxing parallels. In older times, Irish people didn't pay so much attention to next door. They weren't too fussed about looking over the fence or out the window. They were in some ways, but they weren't as obsessed with keeping up with the Joneses and what friends are doing or neighbours are buying or what cars they were driving. They were where they were. Irish people had a simple life. We lived in good times and bad. And when times are tough, we tightened the belt and we got by. And when times are a little bit better, we let the belt off a notch or two, and we lived a little bit better then too. And bear with me on this if it's going a little bit left of field. If you think of a baby when it's born and all the key development stages, each of those stages are vital for a person to grow up with balance and know-how. But we grow up learning from parents, grandparents, all of whom grew up in times when people learned from each other. Grandfathers and fathers showed their sons how to behave, how to grow up with morals, how to interact and how to behave around people. They taught them how to grow, how to build, how to fix, balanced, capable with manners and ethics. And the exact same with daughters and mothers, grandmothers. And by the same virtue, boxers learn from coaches who had spent years and years learning, watching, knowing how to read their fighters. They didn't skip stages, they didn't try, and they weren't allowed to handle fighters before they were able. And take these thoughts into account when you consider what made your favourite footballer or boxer so likeable, so affable, so relatable. What makes the public want to get behind a Muhammad Ali, a Joe Frazier, a George Foreman, or any of the Four Kings? Why did Mickey Ward become the poster boy and the love of the working class people, the world around? Why was Kenny Dalglish, Jimmy Greaves, Bobby and Jack Charlton or George Best loved so dearly? They almost became a household fixture, welcomed into the sitting room every Saturday night on Match of the Day. And in times far, far tougher than the ones we're in at the moment, did people spend the little money that they had in their pocket going to watch Barry McGuigan, Wayne McCullough, Steve Collins, or in later years, Carl Frampton? Despite all of their different stories, their different backgrounds, their paths to glory, these athletes transcended their sport. Their performances, their victories, and even their losses allowed people to escape. For the 90 minutes of their football match, for the 36 minutes that they boxed, they became engrossed, involved. They forgot how shitty work might be, how horrible life is at that time, how tight money might be, the worries of family issues. And as an extension of that, the players realised it, they bought into it, they took the fans with them on their journey, they allowed them that escapism, harnessed and used the energy created, the passion, to make magic happen on the field, and it made the sporting world a more honest and a better, more enjoyable place. Created more amazing stories, fabulous stories of heartbreak, not all of victory, not all of wins. And it's not only in boxing that that's missing in this current era, this phase, this stage, these years that we're going through. The total and unquestionable commitment to being a partner, to being a husband or a wife, to being a dad, to being and learning life as a coach, as a fighter, as a footballer. And I'm not saying everybody is guilty of this, not for one moment. But I do believe there is a large percentile of people in general who want more than they're due. They want more than they're entitled to because the person across the road has it, or because that fighter in the room next to them has it. It's time to take stock, to be real, to follow the paths of those who went before. Take time to learn, to fail, to fall, to get back up and fall again if needs be, but fall forward. Is it just me? Am I wrong in thinking like that? Let me know in the comments below. Get in touch on Instagram or Twitter, whatever the case. I'm fascinated to know there is no simple answer and there is no one answer that fits all. But I would be fascinated to know where some of the explanation lies. Maybe the talent is just not there at the moment. And that's not a sin. That is no crime. That's no insult or slight on anybody, because I can be full sure that everybody, to a man, to a woman, is doing their utmost, their best, to deliver the maximum of their potential. But let's finish on this point. Is it a coaching problem? Are the coaches not experienced enough? Are they not skilled enough? Do they not know how to teach a boxing style based on a solid set of fundamentals with a defensive responsibility that prevents those fighters from getting hurt or knocked out or from progressing?
Let me know what your thoughts are.
When we talk about rivalries, many of them start out as the absolute opposite. They start out as relationships, sometimes as stablemates, sometimes as manager-fighter, sometimes as coach-fighter. Something that's blown up and got rather ugly very quickly over the last few years and then seemed to have a cooling off period and has really ignited again is the Carl Frampton-Barry McGuigan feud. For me personally, it's sad, and I think for a lot of boxing fans, there's a lot of wrongs, a lot of undeniable wrongs. If the facts are as they've been laid out and as we've come to know them, well then, the wrongs are truly wrong. I'm privy to some of the background, which goes back to the feud which also went between Barry McGuigan and the late, great Barney Eastwood, which aren't all out there. They're not all out there, and there are a lot of similarities, and it's not for me to repeat them or to betray the confidence of a legendary boxing coach from Belfast, but there's a lot of that story didn't come out, and you can see a lot of tangents, a lot of parallels. But whatever the case may be, when you look at those same parallels, there are a lot of similarities. Both fighters grew up in troubled times. Both used boxing as their escape. Both Frampton and McGuigan married across the divide. One being a Catholic, one being a Protestant, marrying the opposite. And whilst that's not a big deal right now, I can tell you for certain, at the time, it was a huge deal. A huge, huge deal. And certainly back when Barry McGuigan was conquering the divide, it was life-threatening. And that's not exaggerating. So when their paths crossed, and when Barry McGuigan became the manager and the mentor and the man steering the career of a fighter who wasn't a guaranteed certainty, who didn't have promoters or managers queuing up for him, he hadn't fulfilled his undeniable potential and his undeniable talent as the amateur. He's admitted so himself in his recent book. But there was always flashes, there was always glimpses, always enough there to let you believe that this kid is at least worth a go. Neither fighter ever used the situation in the North, the political difference, the divide, to enhance, to grow, to build their careers. In fact, they built their careers in spite of the divide. It was famously said when McGuigan was boxing, "Let McGuigan do the fighting," that there was almost a ceasefire. While he was boxing, there would be no troubles. Such was the appeal.
And now, McGuigan is on his way.
Carl was the same. He didn't use flags. He didn't use songs. He didn't use anthems. He boxed for himself and for his supporters.
But I know what means even more than the bouts, the travel and support. It's unbelievable. Things like Belfast. Everywhere we go. Everywhere we go.
They attracted partisan crowds, but it didn't matter where they were from, who you were, what religion you were, it didn't matter. And I can speak from experience, having been amongst the Carl Frampton hordes as he went to winning European and world titles. And it's admirable because both grew up in the troubles and didn't lean into it. So when you see some who have subsequently leaned into it, that the career of Carl Frampton was being guided by a previous great, by an Irish boxing Hall of Famer, made it all the more special. So when the split happened, made it a little bit more bitter, and it has become an awful lot more bitter since. And whilst I'm not sitting on the fence, what really makes it a little bit conflicting and afflicting for myself is the reason I started watching boxing, like so many other Irish people way back when, was that Barry McGuigan versus Pedroza fight, the famous night in Loftus Road.
25,000 people singing McGuigan home to victory.
So, a unanimous decision by McGuigan.
McGuigan has won it. McGuigan is the champion of the world. They've all voted for him.
It makes it a little bit difficult for me to turn a knife or to throw salt in a wound that is already very gaping. It's very saddening, but it's indicative of the times that we live in, and it is sadly indicative of the sport and the business side of the sport that we love so much. And I guess what I'm trying to do is highlight in this small feature of this podcast episode that there are many, many layers to this, and many of them aren't known. And I'm privy to some that go way back to the Eastwood McGuigan fallout. I'm sure there are even more in the Frampton McGuigan fallout. But what I want to do in this episode is ask you your thoughts. Where do you lie on this? Get in touch through the social media, let your comments or email, or let me know what you think. And if there's more episodes to come, we can make another episode on it. We can get your thoughts on it, or if you want to come on and have a chat about it, we can do that too. Just keep them responsible. Keep them as constructive as we can, and I won't say positive, but just be aware that there's elements to this that we don't need to take any deeper or make any worse than they already are. To say the news of Hugh Russell's death this week was shocking and saddening would be a gross understatement. Equally as saddening is the fact that it's all too rare for such a genuine, honest, caring and overall good guy to remain so throughout the demands of a career in boxing. That career took Hugh Russell around the world and back, a trait that's familiar with most, if not all, of Belfast's boxing sons. A distinguished career in the amateur vest saw him win numerous titles, the highlights being a bronze medal at the 1978 Commonwealth Games in Edmonton and another bronze at the Moscow Olympics in 1980. The rite of passage at that era was for young promising amateurs to turn over under the tutelage of the late great Barney Eastwood, which Hugh did, and Russell went on to win British and Irish titles. In fact, he was the first boxer to win a British title at bantamweight and flyweight in that order. And the timing of his passing is ironic as we prepare for a massive all-Belfast battle between Tyrone McKenna and Lewis Crocker. Can't be lost on boxing fans that it will be the biggest Belfast derby since Hugh's titanic tussle with Davy Larmour. In the words of Neil Lochran, Hugh's great pal and colleague at the Irish News, in the space of 5 months during the early 1980s, Hugh Russell and Davy Larmour locked horns in two bloody battles that brought big-time boxing back to Belfast and set a standard for all future generations. His boxing career ended in 1983 as an undefeated British flyweight champion, and he went on then to become an award-winning press photographer. And it's no surprise to many who knew this incredible man that he became even more of a success in the journalism world than he had ever been in the ring. If you're rightly impressed that Hugh Russell managed to do all of that, two careers in one life, then stop, appreciate and imagine that he was only 64 when he passed away. Titles that he wore with even greater pride than anything he ever did in a professional capacity was the title of dad, of husband and family man. Hugh Russell will be remembered as a legendary, unifying figure during the darkest days of troubles. He will be very, very deeply, sadly missed by friends, by opponents, by colleagues, by contemporaries, but he will never be forgotten.